They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, joining me now on the show, one of my favorite NBA foils.
Don't lie to people.
I'm trying to tell them the truth here. I'm trying to tell them the truth here. A man that whose takes I vigorously disagree with, and I often prove correct. He is the co-host of First Things First on FS1. You can listen to him on Sirius XM Radio every weekday. He is Nick Wright. What's happening, Nick?
Were you saying my takes are often proven correct or you're often proven correct? You cut out there.
Oh, no, I believe that mine, if you were making...
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, if we were making kind of a flow chart here, like mine more often correct, yours, you know... you have been betting on LeBron every year since he's been in the league, so I guess that...
Mm-hmm. It's
a
good bet.
Advantage. It's a good bet. It's a good bet.
It's a good bet. It's been a good bet. You know when it's going to be a great bet? This year. I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if that's where you want to start, but that's when it's going to be a great bet. Shout out, by the way, to your guy Tatum. I thought he had maybe the best 5-point performance of the season to start the bubble. But what are we doing today?
And what did he rebound with in game two? What kind of performance did he have?
I don't know how many rebounds he had in game two. No, I don't have that in front of me. I think he had 34. I think he played
34.
Well in game two.
34
yep, it was,
in game
it was,
two.
It matched point for point what Caris LeVert did that day. So shout out to both of them.
Okay, we're going to go. We're going to compare Tatum with Caris LeVert. I like that.
They just both scored 34 on August 2nd. That's all I know. Go ahead.
The difference is Caris LeVert is playing games that are utterly meaningless at this point, since the Nets are going to make the playoffs and then just get steamrolled by the Bucks in the first round, whereas Tatum is on a team fighting for seeding, baby, trying to keep that number three seed so they can get a good first round matchup. So, but that's neither here nor there. We can start with the Lakers, though, because most fascinating team in the bubble, I think, because I said this on last week's podcast, there are two camps out there, Nick, when it comes to the Lakers on this restart, and you can tell by the restart point of view is looking more accurate. But there are some that believe that the absence of Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo, at least for a short time, is significant. There are others that believe that who cares? You plug Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith in, you still have LeBron James and you still have Anthony Davis. Which side of the fence do you fall on there?
I hate to start the podcast with, you know, splitting the middle here. But I am somewhere in the middle. I think losing Avery Bradley matters. I think he was one of the only guys on this team that, you know, isn't going to be afraid of the playoff moment. And he was signed for a very specific role, which is if LeBron is going to be your team's point guard, you need someone else in the starting lineup who can guard opposing teams' point guards. And that's what he was. Now, I think Rondo has been a disaster for this team for 2 years. And people are like, playoff Rondo, playoff Rondo. I don't know that that's still a thing. And if we're being totally candid, what that series, we're really talking about his time in Boston, which was, you know, during Obama's first term, and the one series against Portland when, you know what I mean, we saw playoff Rondo. So maybe that's still a thing. I have my own skepticism about it. So the Rondo thing to me is not a huge deal. But what I do think the Bradley loss exposes is, and again, I don't want to overreact, but the advanced numbers screamed, oh my God, Alex Caruso and LeBron, it's the best two-man duo in basketball, like for numbers wise. But this is one of the issues to me with some advanced numbers, similarly with the per 36 numbers, like Knicks fans, not to get too in the weeds, but like Mitchell Robinson per 36, he's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And it's like, yeah, but he wouldn't be doing that if you gave him 36 minutes. I think Caruso, and he can grow into it, but is we're seeing that maybe limited minutes allow him to be his best version of himself. And so I do think it matters. I think everything got harder for the Lakers. They lost the home court advantage, which they had earned. They would have had a special home court advantage over the Clippers because they would have had seven home games. They didn't earn that. That's just good fortune. And they lost, of all the contenders, they're the only one that had a starter opt out. Now, luckily, they've got the best big man in basketball and the best player in basketball. And so I still think they'll win the title. But I think things got, 17% more difficult for them.
Yeah, don't you get a little leery, with the idea or thinking about the idea of having JR out there for meaningful minutes in a conference finals like that? That may, and even Deion out there. Deion's still doing some Deion-y things where he's just, going up against three defenders and firing up shots, from all angles.
So
like
Deion makes me anxious. You know what I wish? I wish Deion, both players would be better if Deion and Ben Simmons had brain transplants. I wish Deion had Ben Simmons' shot selection because he's good at getting to the bucket, and the Lakers need that. Like, and he finishes well, but he loves a three dribble mid-range jump shot with a hand in his face. He loves it. He just has always loved it, and that's not his game. Now, that dates back to his first media interview maybe ever was his freshman year at Syracuse. He did it with my friend, who's now the afternoon host of The Score in Chicago, Danny Parkins, when Danny was at Syracuse as well. And Danny asked him if he had any nicknames. And he said, and I've gotten this story wrong. I've said the wrong nickname. Danny corrected me. He said, yeah, they call me Kobe Wade because I'm a combo of those two players. And his shot selection is, but he's obviously not. But Deion's been helpful. JR, I wanted them to sign JR before they signed Deion. JR looks amazingly rusty. Now, maybe that rust wears off, or maybe he's, old. But I don't – the moment won't be too big for JR. Everyone kills JR for the, for getting the score in 2018. But he was a big contributor in those finals in 2018. We know, and I know it's 4 years ago, he hit massive shots in game seven of the finals in 16. So the moment won't be too big for him. I am bullish on this. Sorry for filibustering a bit. I think Kuzma, the issue with Kuzma, I believe, is he hasn't been paid. And when any young player hasn't been paid, they want to get their numbers in the regular season. It's no one's fault he hasn't been paid. It's not his time to get paid yet. I think he's smart enough to realize in the postseason, it's not about my numbers. If we win a title, I get paid regardless of my scoring. And I feel like he's tried harder on defense. He's cut down some of the bad shots. And the other thing is, listen, a series it might come down to is Danny Green hot or cold. Because Danny Green is going to get open shots. LeBron's going to get it to him, the perfect position, and he's got to knock him down. And so, with the Cavs in his second stint, Korver was really, really great in the playoffs until finals games, in which case he was horrible. Danny Green has been awesome in NBA finals in the past, but Kuzma could be the most important third piece here. It makes me a little anxious, but I think he's played better in the bubble than he was playing during the regular season.
Yeah, I think you're right about Danny Green and him making open shots, because there will be open shots, and if he shoots a high percentage, the Lakers are going to be impossible to stop offensively throughout this. And
especially, look, I'm sorry, real quick on just one thing on Danny Green open shots. I know everyone's talking about Lakers Clippers, but whether that happens or not, if the Lakers get through it, I believe Milwaukee's waiting on the other side, and Milwaukee is going to give you threes. They're going to say you're going to have to hit threes, and Danny Green is going to be a huge piece of if they can beat Milwaukee, because Milwaukee's not going to give you anything easy at the rim.
No, they're not. Milwaukee, I mean, I understand that's a defensive philosophy, and I was at the game against the Rockets where they turned giving up open threes into an art form. I mean, it was like the Rockets, attempted 61 threes in that game. Yep. I would argue that 50 of them were open, and they're all off, Russell Westbrook, driving kicks, or, you know, James Harden driving kicks. Yep. That's a dangerous philosophy, man. Like, that's a dangerous thing to do in this league. I mean, I guess, you know, I thought coming in that maybe the shooting percentages would be lower because of the rust factor, but there are teams out there shooting the lights out of the ball. I mean, the Rockets, they weren't happy with what they shot in that game, but they still made 21 of those threes, which is right around 34-35%. The Clippers in that game against New Orleans shot the lights out against the Pelicans. You know, if you're banking on, you know, giving up open threes being okay, I mean, I question that defensively. I question that philosophy, at least when it comes to winning a championship. I'm not sure you can win a championship if you're going to give up that many open threes.
I think Milwaukee's got a few legitimate concerns, and one of them is this, man. I looked this up, and so I this is a random thing. So, how many games this year do you think Giannis played more than 36 minutes?
Very few.
The answer is twice.
Yeah.
For context, so that puts him 121st in basketball. Dame did it 42 times. LeBron, who's in year 17, did it 20-something. Kawhi, who I'm not certain enjoys playing basketball, did it 9 times. And so there is a – and now people are like, well, it's because they're blowing everyone out. Fair enough. Well, he still averaged 30 points. Fair enough. The Rockets game, Giannis was 36-18-8. He was unbelievable. That was a close game throughout, and he played 32 minutes. I say all that to say this. Man, you got to ramp up his minutes. He's going to have to – the East is not going to be a cakewalk. He's going to have to be able to play some 40-minute games. And I don't think you can just – even though he clearly is healthy enough, is strong enough, has the in great shape, all this stuff, I don't think you can go from being a guy that runs the 400 to being the world record holder in the 400 to be like, hey, just run the 800. Like, I do think you've got to ramp that up a bit. And I think that also Milwaukee can be a victim. Milwaukee does, I know other people have said this, they do remind me a bit of those 2009-2010 Cavs, which are, they kick your head in, so you don't have to play close games. They have a player who is just, statistically speaking, head and shoulders better than everyone else. But similar to 2009-2010 LeBron, it doesn't necessarily have the greatest go-to move at the end of close games. Now, at least LeBron would take threes. Giannis takes threes, but I think 2009-2010 LeBron was a better jump shooter than Giannis. But Milwaukee is not invincible, and they're not even invincible. I thought they were. I said in January I didn't think they'd face a game 6 in the East. I no longer feel that way.
Yeah, I found it very interesting to see how they, and frankly other teams, defend Russell Westbrook. I mean, Houston's one of the wildest of wild cards that are out there, but if you go back to February and when the Jazz played them, and you remember this, when Utah stuck Rudy Gobert on him, on Westbrook, yeah, and just dared Westbrook to beat them with mid-range jump shots, and he put up a huge number in that game, but it was a smart philosophy because I would, if I'm defending Houston, I would live with 18-footers from Russell Westbrook all day long. If Russell wants to beat you from 15 to 18 feet during that game, I would live with that. What I can't live with is Russell just carving up Dante DiVincenzo and George Hill and kicking it out to open three-point shooters who are good three-point shooters. Having, yep, Brooke Lopez have to collapse off P.J. Tucker was a disaster for the Bucks. I mean, I don't know how you feel about the Rockets and their chances to do anything, but if teams continue to defend them like that, they've got a shot because they can put runs on you like no team in the NBA right now.
Here's what I think of the Rockets. I think Chris Paul's missed free throw last night could be one of the bigger moments of their season. And I say that because if the Rockets get the 3 seed, I think they make the conference finals. I think the Rockets beat the Clippers. I don't think they beat the Lakers. And you're going to say, oh, Nick, you're just a LeBron James guy. But I think that the Lakers can play small with the most skilled 7-footer in the league out there. And that's a huge problem. And I was at Lakers, Rockets, in Houston. And the, you know, before the shutdown. And PJ Tucker does give LeBron James a hard time, but eventually LeBron wears him down. And PJ, I think, got banged up in that game. Like, I don't think the Rockets have, there's not a lot of teams that have bodies throw at LeBron, especially because the Clippers signed three of them. You know, the Clippers are like hoarding LeBron defenders. And so but I do think that, you know, the Clippers Rockets is a really interesting series because the Clippers to me don't have the guy to take full advantage of the Rockets' lack of size. And the Rockets added variance of just throwing threes at you. That's again, not new ground, but I also do believe we were talking about, I think the Lakers and Bucks to me are the teams two most disadvantaged from the restart because they earned home court. And everyone talks about game 7 on your home court. How about games 1 and 2 on your home court and starting series off right? I think the team that benefited the most is Houston because Houston was having a crummy, you know, stretch. They got to reset off that. They obviously weren't going to, even if they get to the 3-line, weren't going to have home court advantage past the second round of the playoffs. And I think there is something too. James Harden's workload is so high in the regular season that come game 95, he wears down. And now he got a total break. And that's not an excuse. Like, listen, I like Houston. I hope Houston does really well. I love Daryl. I love Russ. And so, I'm rooting for my pick, which is the Lakers. But if they don't win it, I'd love it if it were Houston. I think it'd be great if Daryl and Russ and Harden got a championship. And the way it changes the legacy for those two players is more than anybody else in the league, maybe. I just really think that if we're talking about the teams the shutdown helped, I think Houston is at the very, very top of that list. Other than Portland, I guess. I mean, Portland got their healthy guys back, but I don't think they matter.
Oh, you fired off a tweet about Portland a little early in that, Memphis game?
The Memphis game. I called game, and they ended up winning. That's true. True story.
So you're not nervous. If you're the Lakers, how nervous should you be about Portland getting into the playoffs?
0% nervous.
0%.
Here's a fun game. If we were talking about teams with somebody to stop LeBron, is Portland the single of all 30 teams? Are they the single least equipped to have someone to guard LeBron James?
I know, like, and I agree with this. I agree with this part of the Portland take because I would be much more intrigued by the Blazers if Trevor Ariza was
there. If Ariza's there, sure. If Ariza's there, it's like everyone's like, oh, they got Zach Collins back. Man, if the Blazers make the playoffs, they would trade out Zach Collins for Trevor Ariza in a heartbeat because, like, I mean, their starting lineup, I guess Melo is guarding LeBron. I love Melo. He brought Syracuse championship. That's a disaster. And then coming off the bench with Gary Trent Jr., like, he's been good for them. But, like, they just don't have the bodies. And by the way, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
Because
just because
who gets that
spot? Whoever is the 8 seed, I will bet a massive amount of money makes the playoffs. I think that
you got to beat them twice.
I think people have totally underrated how impossible that is. Impossible is too strong of a word, but for two teams that are of similar caliber on a neutral court, where you're playing back to back elimination games. And whomever's there is going to be a flawed team. Like, I think that now Memphis is trying to give it away. I mean, they just keep losing games. But my money would still be on Memphis. I think it'd be hilarious if the NBA does all this to get, like, Zion in or Portland in. And if the Kings end up there, I just think that would be great.
Forget the Kings. San Antonio. I mean, they were one Shake Milton three-pointer away last night from starting 3-0 and cutting that to, like, what, a game and a half between themselves. And I was sitting there next to a scout last night watching Spurs Sixers, and I could name, like, four Spurs Like when they're out there warming up, I could, you know, say like, all right, that's Patty Mills. That's obviously DeMar DeRozan. That's Jakob Poeltl. Okay, that's DeJounte Murray.
DeJounte like Murray.
We start going.
I was about to say you forgot DeJounte Murray, but I wasn't going to say a fifth guy. It's a 100%, absolutely right. And the Spurs also, we're not going to see it, but I do think a Spurs Rockets series would be funny, just because they could both play like on the same end of the court. It's like, hey, you take inside, we'll take outside.
I mean, if you're the Lakers, though, and Danny Green's even said this, like, we're not looking forward to a Portland, you know, matchup. I mean, that's probably, when you contrast that with the cakewalk Milwaukee's going to have in the first round, you don't want to go six games maybe with Portland.
Like, right, they could
probably push
the
Lakers.
See, so I don't think so. I think it's a gentleman's sweep no matter who the Lakers are playing. But what I do think that is interesting, and let me get your opinion on this. Now the Lakers have officially clinched the one seed. LeBron couldn't do it out West. LeBron can't do it out West. It's the East. First year healthy one seed. Also, by the way, clinched the one seed before Milwaukee clinched their one seed. How about that? I think the Lakers should start gaming their schedule. And by that I mean, I think it is in their best interest because everything that people say Portland could present problems for the Lakers, that's why Houston really could, because Russ and Harden are better than Dame and CJ, and they do have somebody who can guard LeBron, and they so what I'm saying is the Lakers play the Thunder, then the Rockets on a back-to-back. I think that they should absolutely rest against the Rockets, everybody, because they want the Rockets to win that game. They want the Rockets to move up to the three line. They play the Nuggets. They should absolutely treat that like a playoff warm up, and try to knock the Nuggets down to the four line or five line. And if for some reason, if the Kings have some chance of making the play in, that's who they play in the final game of the year. And that game, Jared Dudley needs to play 48 minutes. No offense to my friend Jared, but like, get your shots up, man. Like, so I've been very critical of load management, but I do think that once you clinch your seed, the number one seed, and because there is no home court, they don't have to chase Milwaukee. That's meaningless. Even though I do think that you do get a little extra boost by having the, like, your fake fans there. I do feel like you can feel the momentum of the sound and stuff. But you can deal with that.
You don't feel it quite as much in the arena. I think it comes across more.
Maybe it's just on TV. But I do think that they should be very strategic with when and how they rest their guys, because now they've clinched the one seed. Now it's just about the best path to a championship. And I do think that means they can beat the Rockets, but they would sure as hell prefer to only have to play, to me, one of Clippers Rockets as opposed to consecutively Clippers Rockets.
You had kind of a throwaway line in that answer about Harden and Westbrook being better than Dame and McCollum. Maybe I agree with you, but it's razor thin in my mind, at least this year. I mean, Lillard's a top five MVP player this year.
I saw a lot of people say that Lillard's top five MVP. I think that's insanity.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, listen, man, I understand you didn't have your big men. But you were nine games under 500, and you played almost the whole year, and CJ was there. Like, stop it. He was great. Statistically, it was maybe his best season, but it's a bridge too far, the Dame MVP stuff. I don't have a real ballot like you guys, because the NBA, I don't know why, it's really one of the saddest parts of my life, is that I spend all this time filling out a ballot and it's a fake ballot. I send it to the NBA certified mail. They send it back to me. It's insulting. The whole thing is really sad for me. But I thought Dame, you could make a strong argument that Dame was third team all NBA. And I see, like, and so I think that Harden and Russ are – I think Harden is a tier above Dame. And I know Russ is a tier above CJ. So, like, to me, that's it's not that close.
I mean, I go, like, Damian has become one of those guys, and maybe was this way last year, that can win games by himself. Like, end of games, can just take over and beat you. I mean,
oh, look, no doubt.
I don't mean to, you know, to bring Boston to this and say, but Marcus Smart is an all NBA level defender, whether it's first or second team, he's sure. all NBA. And Damian Lillard in the fourth quarter of that game with Smart on him was dominant. He pulled the Blazers back into it. If not for a god awful Yusuf Nurkic pass at the end, they might have won that game and pulled out a game they had no business winning at the end. I mean, he's just one of those few guys, man, that you know, fourth quarter situations, there's very few players in the league that are more feared than Damian Lillard.
Oh, I agree with you on that entirely. I just think, you know, so can I tell you my fake ballot? I'm going to. Giannis has to be the MVP. There was a world where LeBron could have caught him. You know, Giannis was going to miss time. The Lakers had just beat the Clippers and the Bucks, but that world didn't exist. So Giannis has to be the MVP, and LeBron has to be second. And if someone makes the case for LeBron as MVP, it's fine. But to me, it's pretty clear. Now, I also think, and tell me if you agree, no one else should get a second-place vote. Those have to be your top two.
There's a tier there. It's those two, and I agree with you. There's not any kind of case that you can make in a shortened season that LeBron should be MVP over Giannis. Giannis was just too good in every possible category. But after that, it should honestly be Giannis with 90% of the first place votes, and LeBron with 90% of the second place votes, and the other 10 first place for him.
Exactly right. So we're on the same page there. Then it gets really complicated, and I thought that the person I put third, more people were going to have, maybe not third, but certainly top five, and people were shocked by it. I put Chris Paul third, and I had Harden and Luka as 4 and 5 or 5 and 4, I don't remember. Now, I had Harden and Luka as my first team guards, and Chris Paul's my second team guard, because I look at all NBA more about like statistical dominance as long as the team's relatively good. And MVP, I found with Chris Paul, even though he blew the game, I shouldn't say blew the game, but he missed the free throw against the Nuggets that cost me money, and it was just a disaster. I had under 220, man. I had under 220. That game was going to end 110-109. And then we go to overtime at 109 apiece. Like, what are you doing to me, Chris Paul?
It's funny. I had a friend with over 220 who texted me almost the opposite thing that you were talking about right now.
Yeah, disaster. But regardless, I just think what he did, and people, my friend Chris Broussard made the case, like, it's not just, or no, it was Antoine Walker actually made the case on the show. He was like, it's not just Chris Paul. It's a three-guard lineup of Shea, Schroeder, and Chris Paul. And it's like, yeah, but why do you think those guys all of a sudden are making winning plays late in games? It's because Chris Paul's put him in the right place. Like, he might be a Napoleon-esque tyrant, but he is just, for a team that I thought might tank this year, I think it's unbelievable what they've done. I think he's got a very legitimate case to at least be on the MVP ballot, even if some people think third is too high.
No, I completely agree with you, because Chris Paul could have imploded that team's season by saying, I don't want to be in Oklahoma, or sulked his way through it. Instead, he did the exact opposite with that team. He not only came with the right attitude, but he approached being a mentor to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and some of the other young players on that team the right way. Like, he was willing to work with them, and he became and has become a huge mentor for Shai. And if you want to make a statistical argument, look at the on-off numbers for Oklahoma with Chris Paul on and off the floor. Like, they are, you know, like top four in a conference with Chris Paul on the floor. When he goes off, as excellent as Dennis Schroeder's played, and I think Dennis Schroeder's the sixth man of the year, they're just a different team. So I think there's an argument
for that. His clutch numbers and the team's clutch numbers, and after the slow start that they won like 65% or 60-some% of their games. And I know they're different caliber players, but what if Chris Paul had done what Iguodala did? Buy me out, get me out. You can't buy him out because he's got too much money, but I'm not playing for a non-contender. And by the way, Iguodala, like, just, I guess, assumed Memphis was going to be terrible. Like, I think Memphis, I think, is going to make the playoffs. They certainly were in position. And if they had had, like, a savvy veteran like Iggy, maybe they're more solidified into the playoffs. And so I thought that Oklahoma City was going to – now, the other Oklahoma City thing, I know I'm kind of bouncing around, that if Paul George struggles in the playoffs, which he's known to occasionally do, and the Clippers, because of that, don't achieve what people think they should achieve, I think it'll be a very interesting question of would Kawhi have been better off standing pat with the Clippers team? Forget standing pat in Toronto, a Toronto team that, like, somebody asked me on the radio show the other day, do I think Kawhi would have a better chance of winning if he had just stayed with the Raptors? And the answer to me is unequivocally yes. I mean, that team's awesome. Team's awesome still. And I mean, so, like, yeah. But the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, and the picks you traded away to allow you at the deadline to maybe acquire some type of rim protection to help you against the Lakers, would that have been better than just Paul George? To me, it's certainly a possibility. Like, and now at the time, I don't think people thought it was, but seeing how especially SGA has blossomed, and people saw some of that coming last year, I think it's an interesting what if. Like, what if Kawhi just said, I'm signing with the Clippers and the team that, you know, took the Warriors 6 last year?
All right, let me finish with the Clippers then, because I know you have not been bullish on, you know, certainly their chances to beat the Lakers. And coming into this, I was kind of with you, and my reasoning was, you know, they haven't had any continuity in you know, over the last month, whether it's COVID-related issues, the Lou Williams fiasco, you know, Montrezl Harrell and Patrick Beverley having to leave the bubble for personal reasons. They've had Kawhi and they've had Paul George, and your stars matter. But I looked at that kind of lack of continuity for almost the whole month of July as being a problem for them. Then they show up and they play pretty well against the Lakers. They absolutely steamroll the Pelicans in that second game, and they're making three-pointers. Now they're going to get Williams and Harrell back into the mix. Has your opinion on the Clippers evolved at all over the last week and a half?
Well, it's the week and a half, it's kind of been static. What I'll say is it's gotten worse from before the bubble started to right now. Kawhi hadn't looked right. I mean, like, that's just – I'd be worried about two guys, Kawhi Leonard and Kemba Walker. Like, Kemba didn't play basketball for 4 months, and they're like, we don't have any minutes he can play. Like, well, that's a problem. Like, and Kawhi didn't play well in the scrimmages. It didn't – in the Laker game, he either over the restart for, like, stopped having the ability to drive to his left or just didn't feel comfortable with it. Like, that's how LeBron stopped him late. LeBron picked up during the game. He's never driving left. He's just not. And so that's why that picture that was going around the internet, LeBron standing there with his hips turned, looking so confident. He's like, I know he's not going this way. That's a concern. And the Lou Williams thing is a travesty. Like, I'm sorry, man. Like, that you – and I understand Lou Williams has a reputation for being an all-time going-out all-star. I get all of that. But you do have people making major sacrifices. You're away from your family. And if not for that – was it DJ or rapper? I don't know who Jack Harlow is. I've never felt like such an old man dad.
I think he's a rapper.
Like, Jack Harlow. I'm like, Jack Harlow? I listen to hip-hop music. I don't know who the hell Jack Harlow is. Like, if he doesn't accidentally snitch on him, the league doesn't know. And if this whole thing got blown up because you go to a shake joint and get a lap dance, that's a That's a disaster. That's a multi. That's Daryl Morey's tweet times 10. And so, like, as far as the financial implications for the league, and, you know, Kawhi had an interesting quote before the restart. He's like, yeah, you know, I just think we need to get our chemistry and continuity. And it's like, yeah, man, it's one of the reasons why you should play more. And maybe your body doesn't allow it, but that's, to me, that's a bit of an issue. And the Harrell stuff, obviously, you just hope the best for everyone around him, but that hurts you. You know what I mean? Not having, and I feel like sometimes you can have too many B-minus level players on a team. And you almost would be better off having a few more C-minus players because they know I ain't playing. But like Reggie Jackson or Landry Shamet, I don't know who's better. I just know I think you'd maybe be better off with just one of them. And your guy, you know, old Celtic friend Marcus Morris, he hadn't been great for them. And I don't know. And listen, Paul George has obviously been sensational in the very brief part of the restart. And later today, I don't know when this will post, but later today they play the Suns. My guess is they'll crush them. And you know, I don't doubt the Clippers' ability to beat the snot out of, you know, the teams that aren't in the top eight in the NBA. Like, I don't question that. But I, you know, the Rockets play eight guys. They know exactly who those eight guys are, and they know exactly what the rotation is. I also think there's no situation outside of a Lifetime Fitness in 2020 when Joakim Noah should be playing minutes. It doesn't exist. Like, I'm sorry. And so, yeah, I mean, I am as skeptical as I've been throughout the year. And I also do think that the Raptors reminding everyone we're bleeping awesome is a bit of a level set on – no one can deny how out of this world Kawhi was against the Sixers in that series. That was a 98 out of 100 playoff series performance. And against the Bucks, he was probably a 94 out of 100. Nobody can take that away from him. But it wasn't Kawhi Leonard and a bunch of dopes. That was a great team, or an excellent team with a great coach. And so the more you see from the Raptors, to me, the more that reminds you that that was a total team effort that did then culminate in going up against a team that was just decimated by injury in the finals.
And everybody knew their role on that Raptors team. Once Kyle Lowry bought in and got over the DeRozan stuff, everybody kind of knew what their place was in the hierarchy of that team, from Kawhi on down to Siakam to Gasol to Fred VanVleet. I mean, they were in sync with all that. So I agree with you there. I do think the Clippers, I think their vulnerability, at least until a Lakers series, is very early, right? Like, I think, could I see them getting beat in the first round? Maybe. I think they're vulnerable given the fact these guys are still working their way back into form. But I think once they get to the second round, they'll get stronger. And then we'll see in a Lakers series what those two teams look like.
I was going to say for the Clippers, we're talking so highly on the Rockets. They were down 7 with 45 seconds to go against Dallas, and they were down 8 with 3 minutes to go against Milwaukee. If not for those two great comebacks, if the Rockets were potentially staring at getting jumped by Dallas, to me, that would have been the Clippers' worst nightmare, would have not playing the Rockets in round 2, but having to play them in round 1. Like, listen, Dallas has Luka, and Kristaps can do some interesting things size-wise on the Clippers, but Dallas's defense is so bad. I don't think they can – I think it'd be very, very tough to beat the Clippers in the series, and that's almost assuredly going to be the first-round matchup. But go ahead. You were about to say something.
No, I mean, I just to kind of spin it forward here at the end, and I want to get your take as someone that, you know, talks about and covers all sports. Like, the NBA, this bubble's working, right? Like, I'd be surprised if something happened in here. I mean, knock on wood, all that. I'd be surprised. I've been hearing that if the NBA, if we're still in the same place in November, early December, the NBA is going to come back with multiple bubbles next year. I think they're not going to roll the dice and travel the country and play in empty arenas. They are going to operate in regional bubbles, at least until they get some kind of all clear. As you look at what the other sports are doing, is it as simple as bubbles are the only things that can work? Or do you believe that when it comes to football, college and pro, baseball the rest of this season, that they can successfully, you know, pull off a year in the middle of a pandemic without utilizing a bubble?
So two things. One is I do not think the NBA can do a bubble next season. And that's because I don't think you can ask these guys for 6 months to be away from their family.
No, it's but to be clear, just to clarify, it's what they're talking about doing now is 1 month in a bubble, 2 weeks off, and basically play a lot of games in a at least a lot of games early in a bubble, and then you get out of the bubble, then you go back into a bubble. So it's kind of like intermittent as you build up.
I guess that's interesting.
This is not feasible. Doing this for 30 teams for 6 months is not feasible.
No, you can't. And like, it's so funny how, and this kind of spins into your next question, it's so funny in like the COVID world, everything we think is very often the opposite of what's true. So when coronavirus happens, not when it happens, but when the NBA, I looked at the calendar and I was like, my God, like the NBA just got so unlucky. Baseball is so fortunate. They haven't quite started. They'll be able to figure it out. Football got luckier than anybody can imagine. By the time their season's going, you know, we'll have this totally under control. And the NBA might not even have a champion this year. And it turned out the NBA was lucky and the most equipped for it. But because they were so late in the season, they could do this. They could say, listen, guys, here's the deal. And for a lot of you guys, it's going to be a 6 week commitment. And for those of you that it's going to be an 8 to 10 week commitment, you're going to be competing for a championship. You're only going to be here a super long time if you are really competing for a title. And guys bought in for the most part and it worked. So I think that's instructive. The other thing that I think is instructive as far as making any predictions on this is 5 weeks ago, people were looking at the numbers in Florida, sports folks on Twitter, and laughing at the NBA. It was just a fait accompli that this had no chance of succeeding. It was going to last 2 weeks. It was going to be a disaster, right? And that seemed like it would seem maybe a little pessimistic, but it wasn't like a scorching hot take. And so I say that to say this. Man, the NFL starts in 5 weeks. 5 weeks in coronavirus time is like 2.5 years. I don't know. I really don't. I personal example, 10 weeks ago, things were so bad in New York City that I rented a house in Southern California for my wife and daughters and said, listen, we're gonna risk the flight to get you guys out there, and you guys are going to spend 6 weeks out there. And you're going to go from the middle of June to early August. I'll miss you. I'll try to come if I can, but I got to get you guys out of the city. That was 10 weeks ago. And by the way, it was, you're going to fly out of Philly because I'm afraid to have you fly out of New York City. I'll drive to Philly, whatever it is. By the time they were leaving, Philly was worse than New York and LA was worse than both places. And so I was like, I sent them from one COVID hotspot to another. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Like it was, there's, and so I don't know the answer to it. I know that they're going to try their best, and I know that it's understandable folks, you know, crushing the NFL for not having it more together, because they were the one league that had the benefit of time. Where I will defend the NFL is this. They, like many of us, even if we should have known better, I think did not anticipate that the United States would be arguably the single worst equipped country to handle this. And I think the NFL thought we got lucky on the calendar. By the time, maybe we skip a couple preseason games, and by the time September rolls around, we're going to be like Germany. And it's like, no, we're not, actually. And so now you can argue it's those people's jobs not make assumptions and do this and do that, but it was not uncommon thought that the longest this would be into June. And that it, and when the world shut down, no one was questioning, will schools be in person for the following year? The question was, will schools reopen this year? And so we just, as a collective, we've got, I think, just terrible leadership on a grand scale. And you're seeing this in the NBA. I know folks, a lot of folks like to, and you can just edit this out if you want. A lot of folks of my political leaning like to try to convince themselves that toxic internet conspiracy brain is something that only affects a certain type of people or a certain group of people. Ain't true. About 20% of the country's got it, and they are every race, every age, every political belief. Because you talk to enough of these NBA players and find out what they learned on the internet about vaccines and masks and coronavirus. And don't you dare at one of these press conferences ask someone about 5G and microchipping, because I guarantee some of these guys got takes on that too. And that is the whole country. This isn't a Trump thing, anti-Trump thing. It's the whole country, unfortunately, has been infected by toxic internet brain. And there is an inability for a lot of people to differentiate between a Doris Kearn Goodwin book and a Facebook post and a Ken Burns documentary and something they saw on YouTube. And because of that, we are just not equipped as a people to agree on a set of facts to attack big problems. And I know that's not really what you're getting at, but I feel like it's easy to be like Rob Manfred, Roger Goodell, these doofuses. And people are going to think I'm just carrying water for leagues. I'm not. I just think it is too simple to say the leagues messed it up, as opposed to what I don't even know if my kids can go to school. I think that is maybe a bigger picture issue that is going to be some of the lasting legacy of this is, you know, when we do send people back to school, do we start having classes on like how to fact check on the internet and like what a reputable source is and, you know, that and things like that, because we are going to be in real, real bad shape the more that people have the inability to decipher expert analysis and just somebody who put a quote next to a picture of someone who didn't actually say it and then they spread it on Twitter.
No, I do agree with all that. And I do think to kind of put a button on the whole bubble concept, one thing I've learned down here is that you can put your bubble in the hottest of hotspots. It doesn't matter because yep. You are effectively in a different country down here. Like this is technically in Florida. It might as well be in Vermont. Like seriously, like if there's no connection to the state of Florida, you do have, you know, Disney employees and hotel employees that are coming in and out, but they're wearing like not just masks, but they're wearing face shields. Like they're wearing like, you know, they're as protected as they can possibly be, or you're as protected as you possibly be from them. So I think that's part of it. And I think the other thing I've learned is that the reason you have to have a bubble is you can't trust players, just like you can't trust people. Like, and I'm not saying this to say that to jump all over Lou Williams or the Cardinals players that might have been in a casino or the Miami Marlins right. players that might have been, you know, doing whatever. I'd probably be out at a bar if I was, you know, back home for the summer. It's summertime. You want to get out and do some things. The only way to make this work is to put it in the most sterile environment possible and limit the movements of the people in it. And that's the only way I think you can be sure that you're going to have a season. Like that's the only way I can sum it up.
Well, I agree 1,000%. And the only, if there's any saving grace, this, you mentioned the face shield. I heard Dr. Fauci say that, you know, if you want to be totally protected, you got to wear goggles. And you and I are around the same age. Mm-hmm. We came up in an era in high school when it wasn't unknown for folks to wear those ski goggles on the top of their head as a fashion statement. If we can get to a place where everyone is just walking around in those dope ski goggles that people wear during champagne celebrations, that'll at least be a small win in coronavirus times.
Yeah, if you've seen the movie Can't Hardly Wait, look at Seth Green's character rolling around.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, there's jokes to make about that and me and my high school life, but you're too kind to make them, or you just don't know about me in high school. Thank you for having me on, Mannix.
You got it, man. Catch Nick every morning, first things first, on FS1, every afternoon, Sirius XM Radio. Thanks for joining, man. I appreciate it.
See you, brother.